I want everybody to count down from 10 down to 0.
All right, guys. Well, welcome to episode 3 of the Next Level Wrestling Podcast. As you probably know by now, I'm the Andrew Bello. I'm your host right here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. For those of you joining us for the first time, welcome. Thanks for coming aboard. Thanks for taking your time to listen to this show. And we're gonna cover NXT here as we always do. I actually didn't even get a full chance to watch all of SmackDown last night, so I got the tail end of that to check out, but I am obviously going to be watching NXT and recapping that for you a little later in the show. Before I did, as always, wanted to kind of start off with a little bit of news. There was an article released on WWE.com saying, meet the newest recruits of NXT. So they listed off quite a bit of talent that they've recently signed, or some of the talent that they're showcasing. They said approximately, I think, 65 new recruits, but these were the 7 or 8 that they talked about. I'm only really going to cover about 3 of them because they're the most significant by a pretty good margin. So I'll start off with, of course, Roderick Strong, who, as we know, is Austin Aries' tag team partner in the Dusty Rhodes Memorial Tag Team Classic. And I touched a little bit on Roddy last week. I mean, he's coming in with quite an array of different accomplishments from various promotions. He was former PWG World Champion, former Ring of Honor World Champion, actually a Ring of Honor Triple Crown Champion. So he held the World Tag and TV titles at some point during his reign. He obviously also, since basically being there since almost the beginning of Ring of Honor, he accumulated the title of Mr. Ring of Honor. So Roddy obviously has a lot to bring to the table here for NXT, so hopefully we get to see a lot of that. I'm still intrigued to see where they go with this character. I wonder if they're going to end up with him and Aries ending up in coming out of this tournament feuding with one another, and it'll be interesting to see who's on what side. Like I said last week, Roddy is a natural babyface by appearance, but he is probably a significantly better heel, especially if you look at his PWG run. But it'll be interesting to see where they go with him and Aries, or if they stay together as a tag team. Might be the best use of both of them, at least for the time being. Obviously, Aries is down in NXT. I mean, he'd be a perfect fit up here in the cruiserweight division. Man, he would like run the cruiserweight division. Aries would be great up here, but they've got him tied to Roddy Strong. I don't think anybody's really complaining about that at the moment. We'll see what happens there. So getting on to two of the other bigger signings, we have Crazy Mary Dobson is coming in. She's a highly touted female wrestler who's been all over the indie circuit. She was listed on the top 50 female wrestlers by PWI, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the last 2 years. And she finally came into WWE. So I think there was a lot of rumors that she might have been involved in that Sanity faction that is recently debuted on NXT. As we know now, that's Nikki Cross is the female member of that faction. I don't know that there was set in stone that there was ever necessarily going to definitely be a female member of the faction, but there were rumors due to the Sanity and She's Crazy Mary that, you know, it would work out considering how that faction looks now. I don't think that would have surprised anybody, or nor would it have been all that different, frankly, from what we've seen from Nikki Cross thus far. But Crazy Mary Dobson has been on NXT a couple times in the jobber role, and we will see. Obviously, you know, she could make a very quick run to the top of this women's division here, with no one basically being ready for Asuka, to the point that they're bringing in Mickie James to wrestle her at the next TakeOver special. So, you know, again, we'll see what they have in store for her. It'll be interesting to see if and when they debut her and how they do so. And hopefully we'll know more about what they plan on doing with her when that does happen. And last but not least, among the recruits that are coming into NXT is Tommy End. They gave all of these guys birth names on the government website, but I mean on the WWE website rather. And Tommy End is a legit badass. He's a real athlete. He's a highly trained, highly touted kickboxer. He's got a very interesting look. He's just badass. I suggest you guys all go out and try and find a Tommy End match or two. I believe he's wrestled just about everywhere. I know a lot of the English circuit, Progress Wrestling and Rev Pro. I know he's been around there. He's been in PWG's Bola the last couple of years. So if you could check any of those matches out, those are definitely good examples of Tommy Ann's work. But he's, like I said, he's a badass. He's going to come in. He's going to try and kick you in the head. There was actually a really good spot in one of his matches at PWG Bola 2016 where he basically could have kicked his opponent's head clean off of his shoulders and just sort of rest his foot on his shoulder to let him know, that this could have been the end. And it was very cool how he did it. It was very, it was very obvious that he was warning his opponent to not get too sloppy because he's dangerous and he knows he's dangerous, but at the same time, he's got a little bit of nobility going on. I mean, he could certainly be vicious, but you could tell he clearly has some sort of moral standing. Otherwise, he probably would have kicked that man's head off. I think it was Zack Sabre Jr. So if you can find that match from PWG Bola anywhere, certainly buying the DVDs is the best way to go. But we all know you could find stuff like that out there elsewhere. So however you plan on doing it, I suggest you look up that match and some of Tommy N's work in general. But those are the big three that are going to be part of this new class of the Performance Center students, if you will. We'll be seeing Roddy Strong more and more often as he's already part of the NXT roster and part of the Dusty Tag Team Classic, so it'll be interesting to see where they end up going with Crazy Mary and with Tommy End and with some of the other talents that they've had. I mean, we got people who were judo black belts, former football players, former this, that, and the other thing, so a lot of real stud athletes. WWE really does a good job of looking around for talent everywhere. That's basically it from the news for NXT this week. Nothing big. I know that there was tapings not too long ago, so there are some spoilers out there. I personally try to stay away from them. I like watching NXT. I like being surprised. So that's what I'm going to try to continue to do. But if there is any news that's reported by WWE.com or their Twitter account or whatever the case may be, I'm going to bring it here if I think it's pertinent to the NXT product, which a lot of it's unfortunately going to be. Hopefully they don't spoil too much for us. But yeah, that's just about it for news for this week. I'm obviously going to go into the recap here in just a bit, but wanted to give you a little bit of a sneak preview or of what the NXT Alumni Spotlight's going to be for this week. This might be a section that I might start working towards the website once we get the WWPN.com up, and it might be something that I consider to transition into article form rather than talking about it on the show here every week, but that's up to you guys, actually. So hit me up at gmail.com. So that's WWPNBello, WWPN, B as in boy, E-L-L-O, and that's at gmail.com or at WWPNBello on Twitter. Hit me up with your comments, guys, if you like the Alumni Spotlight. I'll certainly keep doing it. I'm happy to please you guys if that's something you guys are into, but if not, and you might be interested in seeing that more in written word as opposed to spoken word, that's something I'd be willing to push to the website. We're all going to try and do some articles and do our best to make this network an all-encompassing wrestling hub. You want to know about wrestling, you want some interesting commentary, you want to get the latest in news, we're going to try and present all of that to you. Like I said in last week's podcast, we are trying to go legit here, and hopefully we could do that, and hopefully you guys come along for the ride. We appreciate our fans far more than we could ever possibly express. Thanks for listening, and thanks for of all the podcasts you can listen to, and there are way too many of them out there, frankly, we're very happy that you've stopped here at the Wrestling World Podcast Network. So, other than that, my NXT Alumni Spotlight for this week is going to be on Eddie Edwards. I'm putting alumni in quotes for this one, because Eddie basically only had one match in NXT. It was a tryout match, him and David Richards, as the American Pit Bulls, known all over the world as the American Wolves, came in and had a match against the then NXT Tag Team Champions, The Ascension. And I'm going to get a little bit more into Eddie Edwards later on in that NXT Alumni Spotlight, but just wanted to give you a little bit of a teaser so you know what you're to look forward to on the other end of the recap. But That's where we're going for right now. I am going to go ahead and watch this week's NXT episode, and I'll be right back with the recap. All right, so we have this week episode 360 of NXT. As usual, they cram a lot of stuff in, so I'm just going to go ahead and get right into it. Our first match is another first-round Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic match. So we have Team DIY, Gargano and Ciampa, taking on Hoho Loon and Tien Bing. Once again, you guys may be asking yourselves, who the hell is Tien Bing? Well, that's because yet again, they took it upon themselves to change somebody's name since they put out the original bracket. So Tien Bing is actually Bin Wang, I believe. Yes, Bin Wang, who is their big signing from China. He's the reason that John Cena learned how to speak Mandarin so he can go over there and have the big announcement, or at least one of the reasons. They're obviously moving into the Chinese market, which is why Hoho Loon and Tien Bing now are teaming together. So Tien Bing, big boy. He's 6'3", 220. So, you know, he's a pretty big dude for, you know, particular for a Chinese dude. They're just generally not very large people, or at least that's the stereotype. So we're gonna roll with it because WWE generally would. Before we even really get much action, we already get the Corey Graves digging graves quote of the week. So, basically, Graves is here talking about Hoho Loon, making fun of his name. So, here's the clip.
Yourself, we know a lot about Hoho Loon, considered the father of wrestling in China, where he grew up with his brother Snowball, Zinger, and Cupcake.
Unbelievable. You've been waiting for how long to do that?
Got it in.
So, Graves showing off his knowledge of Drake's Cakes or Hostess Cakes or, you know, whatever those snack foods happen to be. This match is what it is. It's one of the many matches that, when you looked at the original tournament bracket, you knew that there was going to be some gimmies in the first round. We have DIY. They're obviously winning this match, and they obviously do, to go on to face the Revival in the next round. Couple things going on with this, you know, with this match. At one point, Graves, you know, another great quote of his is that he implies that Loon and Bing are going to go ahead and win. He says something along the lines of, like, how great is it going to be for the Revival when they get to take down two of China's biggest stars? Ha ha ha. Obviously, that's just ridiculous. Like, you don't need to be watching NXT a whole lot to understand that the dudes with the, with the matching t-shirts and the crowd all behind them is going to clearly win this match. Team DIY does exactly that. Like I said, they do the best that they can with Loon and Bing. Hoho Loon was in the Cruiserweight Classic. He came in, obviously, to be a representative for China, and he's one of the more well-known, I guess, Chinese wrestlers. At one point during this match, Graves calls him the father of wrestling in China, so I guess there isn't a long, rich history of professional wrestling in China as there is, you know, here in the United States or in Japan, but Hoho Loon, he's got some swag. Like, I'll give him some credit. He's certainly got some confidence. He must be just, like, over his shit in China, because you could just tell when he does his little taunts or his little poses, he's kind of looking for a reaction that he almost assumes is going to be there, and then it isn't. He plays it off pretty well, though. He's fairly confident for somebody who's clearly below average as far as in-ring work goes amongst the NXT regulars. Not that he's a regular, but, I mean, you got him in the ring with Ciampa and Gargano, two world-class wrestlers who, they know how to do their jobs, and they do them well in this case. Their job was to obviously win this match and try and make Loon and Bing look as strong as they could. Bing, like I said, he's a big boy. He's the biggest guy in this match by a pretty significant margin. Ciampa's probably the second biggest, and he has to be at most 205 to have been in the Cruiserweight tournament. And so there's a couple spots here where, you know, Bing looks strong. At one point, Gargano, you know, takes the beating for most of the early going, or whatever little offense Hoho Loon and Tien Bing get in on this match. And Gargano makes the hot tag to Ciampa, and Bing makes the tag to Loon simultaneously, and Loon comes into the ring like as slow as you've ever seen anybody come into the ring on a hot tag. Now, granted, he's not the hot part of this tag, but usually when this spot happens, traditionally in wrestling, you get both guys kind of coming in full speed, and Hoho Loon comes in like he's going to the electric chair, which he might as well have been, because Gargano hits him with a few strikes that, I cringed sitting at home. Like, yes, folks, I know this is fake, but when you hear that kind of sound coming off of another man's chest from being struck by an open palm strike or, whatever it is, It's got to hurt. I mean, it's got to hurt. It looks like it hurts, and it probably does. It just looked vicious. Ciampa's so good with strikes and kind of working, I guess, in almost an American version of strong style, if you will. I mean, that's just really his offense is smash mouth. I think he generally describes it as unapologetic, I believe is the word that he uses. So, you know, like I said, DIY does the best that they can here. They've really done a good job of trying to make the jobbers, you know, for lack of a better term, look good in this tournament. Ho-Ho Loon and Tian Bing are probably the greenest people that they have in this tournament. And DIY did what they could to try and make them look respectable, and they did just that, and they look strong themselves. They're moving on. We don't get an attack from the Revival after the match, which I was kind of anticipating, because they had to know that, even in kayfabe, the Revival had to know DIY was going to win that match, and because they're looking to win this tournament, they're looking to beat the Revival, and they're looking to win back or win the tag team championships from the Revival, and you know, next round they'll get their chance to do at least one of those. We move on to a commercial break, and then we come back to Samoa Joe with just a masterful Samoa Joe promo in the back, talking about how Nakamura is scared, and that he's, you know, going to be the rightful champion. He's going to take the title back from him. I wrote down a couple notes here just because I didn't want to get into incredible, like, I could quote this whole thing because every word of this promo is just perfect. Like, Samoa Joe is just a master at his craft. I wrote here, it's just a masterful promo. He's just got that incredible intensity and just like a superb vocabulary, using just words you don't hear in wrestling promos, because, you know, as much as we all love these performers, they're not all the smartest people in the world. Just like some of our professional athletes have like third grade reading levels, but they happen to be able really good at carrying a football. But you know, the Joe's vocabulary is certainly not lacking. Quite the lexicon on him, just to flash my vocabulary a little bit. But after that, they come back to the announce table. We see Tom and Corey Graves, who apparently borrowed Cien Almas's old suspenders, because he's wearing suspenders for some god-awful reason. And we move on to the first women's match of the night. Actually, yeah, first women's match of the night. Aaliyah taking on Billie Kay, who's accompanied to the ring by Peyton Royce. We get the whole shtick here with Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. They're just sort of Aussie mean girls and yeah, they're clearly trying to push Billie Kay. We're seeing her every week. The match here, nothing special. I'm not going to get into specifics here, but Aaliyah does end up winning the match with a little help from Liv Morgan, who runs down and distracts Billie Kay. And this whole match is just sort of setting up the second tier of the women's division. You know, Asuka's at the very top there. Ember Moon is floating around somewhere. They clearly have plans for her because they waited so long to bring her up, and they made such a big deal about her debut, and she won, obviously, in the debut, beating Billie Kay, who they're pushing. I don't know if she's hurt, or maybe they're just trying to use her sparingly. They know she's obviously ready, but they need to kind of wait until this whole Asuka situation, which I'll get into a little bit later for this next for the next takeover special, is over. And I guess maybe she's the number two contender, Ember Moon. But as of right now, I mean, if you're looking at it in kayfabe terms, Billie Kay absolutely is you know, the number one contender, I guess, if you will, after, you know, for whoever wins this match coming up at Takeover. She's doing a great job with her heel gimmick. Billie Kay and Peyton, both of them can work. They worked the indies in Australia and other places for a long time before they came here. They were more or less, I wouldn't say finished products, but as far as in-ring goes, they didn't need a whole lot of training. They're both solid workers. They do some kind of cool tandem moves in this post-match here, where basically Liv Morgan comes down, distracts Billie Kay. Billie Kay gets rolled up by Aaliyah, and then Billie Kay and Peyton proceed to beat down on Liv Morgan. Aaliyah sort of disappears for a little while, ends up coming back, and both of them just end up getting beat up pretty bad by Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, who, like I said, they do so with a couple of tandem moves, one of which was like a facebuster. Peyton Royce hits almost a facebuster, almost like an ace crusher, or an RKO for you young kids out there. I say young, like I'm 29, I'm not that old, but nonetheless, I do still kind of know it as an ace crusher. She hits a face crusher onto Billie Kay's knee. It looked pretty brutal. Aaliyah has been appearing a little bit more and more on NXT. Now, if any of you are watching Breaking Ground, you've seen her, formerly Noomph, I guess is her birth name. And she was, you know, she's new to the business, obviously. She's still very green. She's coming a long way. I mean, she looks at least, serviceable in the ring these days. If you saw her kind of early start in Breaking Ground, she was, she wasn't very well versed at the craft of grappling, if you will. She's just kind of green. I don't want to keep using that term, but that's pretty much the case here, especially with Aaliyah. Thus far, what we know about Aaliyah, obviously she's cute. You know, she's a good looking girl, and she's got these weird cat ears. And I know with Breaking Ground, like her gimmick, she was kind of trying to play off of her heritage a little bit and go with like a belly dancer kind of thing. And that certainly plays into her gear and her little pose that she does when she comes out. I don't need her necessarily belly dancing, but if you're going to go that far with the pose and the gear, like, do a little bit of belly dancing. I don't know. I mean, that's just, I don't really know where they want to take her gimmick, or if she's ever going to have one, or if she's just going to be this kind of just lovable, version, almost like a Bailey type character, except for without the great backstory of her being like a lifelong fan. Or maybe she is, and we don't know yet. Maybe they mentioned that in Breaking Ground. Hopefully we get a little bit more character development from not only her, but all of these women, which is why I imagine that we're going to get some sort of tag team match at TakeOver Toronto, get another women's match on the card, get all these women out there in a way that they're not, the spotlight isn't so necessarily brightly shining on any one of them in particular. I'd imagine Billie Kay will pick up the win because she's been getting the biggest push, unless you really want to give Liv Morgan the win here, but we saw Liv Morgan against Asuka. I don't think we need to see that again anytime soon. And Liv Morgan, you know, she comes out, she helps out Aaliyah. Billie Kay and Peyton Royce have been bullying her around for a little while, and she's obviously had enough of it, so she comes out, she enacts a little bit of revenge and helps out Aaliyah. Aaliyah obviously comes back to help out Liv to return the favor, but like I said, ultimately the Aussie chicks stand tall, and Liv Morgan's all right in the ring. I wonder if she's not getting over because of the jersey thing, or because she's so much like Carmella and looks like she belongs with Enzo and Big Cass and Carmella up on the main roster. Like, if they were all four together, that'd be cool. I believe Liv Morgan is actually dating Enzo in real life, both from New Jersey. And Peyton Royce she's good looking. She's pretty good in the ring. She hits some kind of big moves that, I don't know, they pop off the screen to me a little bit. She hits, some pretty good strikes. I know she uses a power bomb every so often, or at least she did in her early days. And it's at least she gives you something during the course of the match. She obviously has some work to do. If anything, this whole match, while it's really good that they're making an attempt to build all these women up, it's just very clear that there is just a huge drop off in women's talent from the women that just went up. Bayley, even Alexa Bliss, and obviously Sasha, Charlotte, Becky. It's Asuka, and then it's everybody else in the women's division right now. So it's good that they're trying to build all of these women up, and hopefully we can get a viable contender for Asuka eventually. And Asuka, ultimately has a match later, but pretty much what we're getting out of this segment here, like I said, is I'd imagine we're going to get a tag team match at TakeOver Toronto. Aaliyah and Liv Morgan taking on Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. And like I said, I'm assuming the heels go over there. They're pushing Billie Kay. She'll probably get the win. She might move on to be the next challenger for Asuka while they continue to build Ember Moon. And that's the end of that first women's segment there. We move on to Ty Dillinger is up next in action. He's going to be taking on Noah Patches from Hawaii. He looks very Hawaiian. He's got the whole graphics thing is very Hawaiian. They're pushing the Hawaiian thing. That's about all we really get to know about Noah, because he gets beat pretty handedly here by Ty Dillinger. But Tom does feel the need, I guess, to as some attempt of character development for this young man. Tom, for some reason, says that Noah's got kind of a reputation of, quote, being kind of a creep backstage. And Graves immediately chimes in and says, Tom, who are you to call anybody a creep? You're Saxton-level creep. So he even manages to make fun of Byron Saxton here on NXT. And Tom, very upset with the comparison, demands that Corey take it back. Like I said, this match is clearly Ty Dillinger's match to just look strong. They're building him up. It's great to see him getting some wins here on NXT TV. It's a very quick match, though. The one kind of highlight of it is Full Sail, who yet again managed to, they kind of did annoy me a little later in the show, and we'll get to that, but they had this match, they made this match more exciting, because it really wasn't anything to write home about. Dillinger's a really good worker. Noah Patches, no one knows anything about him other than he's now 0-1 on NXT TV. He takes the tiebreaker for the loss, but Full Sail, like I said, throughout the course of this match, literally every time Ty Dillinger hits Noah Patches with a fist, a foot, a move of any kind, the crowd chants 10. He's doing foot stomps in the corner. Traditionally, you get the 10 count. Well, they just count 10 times, and I don't even know how he keeps track of it. And the same with the ref. I'd be just so confused. Just everybody chanting 10 all the time. You're trying to count other things, and they're just giving you one number, but the professionals that they are, and, Ty Dillinger is a perfect 10, so he shouldn't really have any issue here with that. But unfortunately for Ty, he's going to lose a takeover because they're building Bobby Roode, and this is Ty Dillinger's role in NXT for whatever reason. But I'm sure I'm going to do a prediction show getting closer to takeover, probably the week of. I may even just squish it into my regular week of NXT. I'll probably see if I can get somebody else from the podcast network on here to do that with me. Maybe CEO Hayes will grace us with his presence. But Ty Dillinger should win a takeover, and here's why. This is, obviously my opinion here. But Dillinger is one of these guys that has never really been given a push at any point, right? Like, he's come up, they've built him a little bit, and then he puts over Apollo Crews, and then they build him up a little bit, and he's putting over Elias Sampson, and then they build him up a little bit, and then he's putting over Cien Almas. And now it looks like we're going to get the same thing with Bobby Roode. Ty Dillinger is genuinely over with this crowd based strictly on perseverance, charisma, and in-ring ability. Like, they have not given him any reason, or them, any the crowd, any reason to root for Ty Dillinger. Ty Dillinger has given them a reason to root for Ty Dillinger, and not only should that kind of behavior be rewarded, but Bobby Roode was over walking in the door. Dude didn't even have to do anything. He could literally walk out to the ring. His theme song alone is enough to just kind of like make the segment. So, what you could do here is you have Ty Dillinger win. He could be the next opponent, maybe, for whoever becomes the champion. And Bobby Roode can, continue to build and help put over other guys. And then, basically, whenever you want, Bobby Roode can be right in the title picture or move up to the main roster. And he's not going to lose a bit of credibility. Bobby Roode is beloved by the NXT audience because the NXT audience is the type of crowd that watch TNA, watches Ring of Honor, watches PWG. Not that Bobby Roode's been in any of those, but TNA. They're aware of indie talent, and they're aware of the big names that are out there. They're going to love Bobby Roode whether he wins or he loses. As a matter of fact, if he keeps losing, it would be even better for his character, because he's just like this delusionally glorious dude who thinks he's just, his shit don't stink for, sorry, pardon my French. But I think Dillinger should win. And they can either, like I said, put him up in the main title picture and have him go up against Nakamura, which would be great. They've actually had a match, at least one match on NXT TV that I loved. It was maybe only like a 6-minute match, if that. But just the two of them have just this crazy charisma. They're both very good in the ring. If you give them like 15, 20 minutes to headline a pay-per-view, first of all, you can headline the pay-per-view with Nakamura and James Ellsworth, and people are still going to love it. Well, maybe that's a bad example. For some reason, James Ellsworth is just insanely over these days. Moreover than half the roster and booked better than 90% of the wrestlers on WWE TV. But anyway, that's a little bit of a tangent. Don't get me wrong, I like James Ellsworth. Like, nothing against the guy. And it's really cool that he gets to live his dream out. And he got a title match. James Ellsworth competed for the WWE World Championship, not the Universal Championship that has no lineage except for two guys who have held it. The WWE World Championship. That's the same belt that Bruno Sammartino held, Bob Backlund held, Hulk Hogan held, Andre the Giant held, all the legends. And James Ellsworth got a shot at it. As a matter of fact, he won the match, but didn't win it. It's just crazy to me. I love AJ Styles, and he could get a rock over, but man, like, couldn't we find anything better for the best damn in-ring performer in the world right now? Like, he's wrestling nobody, and I get that that's sort of a good point there, like, that he's so good he could get nobody over, but he's AJ freaking Styles, people. Like, I don't know. Another one of those booking things that will forever bother me. And I get why people like it. I'm maybe in the minority. Maybe I'm not. Let me know. Follow me on Twitter at WWPNBello, or hit me up at Gmail, WWPNBello. Let me know how you feel about James Ellsworth, guys. That's That's I'm interested to find out the general feedback. But so after the match here, Ty Dillinger cuts a little bit of a promo saying that the only thing, only glorious thing that Bobby Roode's done so far is run. And then obviously right on cue, Bobby Roode sneaks up from behind Dillinger, attacks him, puts the boots to him for a little bit and hits his big impaler DDT on top of the, you know, on the stage or the ramp, as Tom calls it. And Roode, you know, just kind of yells at an unconscious Dillinger, and all this is just troublesome for me. If you guys have listened to the show this far, you know I love Ty Dillinger. I love Ty Dillinger. He's perfect, and I like Bobby Roode, don't get me wrong, but again, you know, Bobby Roode's going to be over. You don't need Bobby Roode to squash Ty Dillinger's momentum again. I think that's what's going to happen here. Maybe they'll do something that'll change my mind, but up until that match, you know, unless they give me another reason to believe otherwise, Bobby Roode is winning that match, and I feel bad for Ty Dillinger. But so we find out that Asuka's coming up next, and then, you know, they lied to us because we come back from commercial, and TM61 is in the back, and we're going to have them cut a little bit of a promo. They're going to be taking on they advanced in the Dusty Tag Team Classic, so they're going to be taking on Austin Aries and Roderick Strong next week. They make reference to the fact that Aries and Strong used to be a tag team, so they say, you know, they were great back then, but now they've kind of went their separate ways. We're a real team. This is probably the best TM61 promo we've had thus far. Miller makes a pretty good kind of, you know, he's shown a little bit of personality, and Thorne's kind of just the straight man. These guys don't have a ton of personality. They're very good in-ring workers. They have a very good look. They have a lot of good chemistry. Neither one of them, I think, is really capable of being a single star in WWE. But as a team, they could work. The Aussie thing, you know, totally works for them. TM61, you know, it's the 6-1 is their area code or country code down in Australia. So they made a reference to that in their name, but they used to be known as the Mighty Don't Kneel, TMDK. Very cool little gimmick that they had. I believe they were doing it obviously in Australia, but also in Pro Wrestling Noah for a while before they got signed to TNA, to NXT. And I'm just about to queue up Impact right after this, from last week. I'm really behind on my wrestling, but I managed to watch NXT just so I could do this. And so the Mighty Don't Kneel used to be their name, and they are just ever so insistent upon throwing that into their promos or ending their promos by saying that they are the Mighty and the Mighty Don't Kneel. And that's great for like the 17 people out there who knew about that before they got to NXT. You know, like I said before, the NXT crowd is pretty smart, but man, like, I watch a lot of freaking wrestling, and while I don't watch Noah, I'll say, I admit it, I don't watch Noah. As far as, you know, wrestling outside of the U.S. and outside of North America goes, I basically stick to New Japan and, you know, some Rev Pro or Progress or any of the big British things, and ICW for that matter over in Scotland. But, you know, I don't follow a ton of Japanese wrestling outside of New Japan, and I don't know that a lot of people do. Maybe I'm in the minority. Again, let me know if I am. You can, you know, find me on Twitter and email, yada, yada, yada. I'll plug it again at the end of the show. You know, I don't see the need for them to keep sneaking this in there unless they're going to ultimately change their name back, which is possible, I guess. You know, WWE's allowing guys to use their names, and maybe that's just a better fit for them. They ultimately decide that, but I don't know. This is, like I said, their best promo probably so far on NXT TV, but at the same time, it still wasn't that great. They're basically just pushing that they're a team, and Aries and Strong are two really good individual wrestlers, and that their teamwork will ultimately carry them through, which is great. It's a tag team classic. That's great in theory, but I think we pretty much well know that Aries and Strong are going to advance. And, you know, if they don't, maybe we get an Aries Strong feud coming out of this. I wouldn't mind seeing that at the next takeover event. Man, what a match that would be added onto the card. And both these guys are really going to need something to do if they're not in the finals, which I haven't predicted that they are, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to end up being true. So yeah, if you throw those two guys on the card with all the other great matches that we have for that, you know, for TakeOver Toronto, that makes one hell of a card, and that's going to make it really difficult for the folks at Survivor Series the next night to kind of match that. I always love when they do the NXT specials on Saturday before pay-per-views, like they've done for SummerSlam and WrestleMania in recent years. It puts the pressure on the main roster to step their game up. Like, these guys, while they're not necessarily booked as well, or you know, I guess they are booked probably better in NXT, but because they're not necessarily as well known. Doesn't mean that they can't put on a kick-ass show. When you draw attention to the NXT shows on those weekends, it really makes the main roster guys really step their game up and try to outshine them. You certainly, if you're in the main roster, you got to look at NXT like AAA. Like, yes, it's a third brand, if you know, to use Triple H's words, but it's a third brand that is clearly, you know, it's the third brand. Like, it's not like there's three brands that are all equal. It's Raw, which is still probably number one. SmackDown, which a lot of people are saying, you know, is better than Raw these days. But NXT is the third one, so you don't want to get outshined by them. And NXT is definitely going to put the pressure on up in Toronto, Survivor Series weekend. Next up, we have Asuka, who is taking on Thea Trinidad, an indie female wrestler who I guess is just popping in for a one-off, sort of like Santana Garrett has in the past, or Tessa Blanchard. I guess they've appeared a little bit more often, but maybe we'll see Thea Trinidad in here more often. You may know her from TNA and various female indies out there. She's been working for a while. The crowd knew her. They were chanting for her a little bit. She was kind of feeling it. Her and Asuka put on one hell of a match. Like, this is what they have to do with Asuka at this point, because the drop-off in the women's division is what it is. They have to go out and find really good kick-ass women's wrestlers on the indie scene that could come in and wrestle Asuka, because she's just an unstoppable machine. One of the things I love about Asuka is, like, I don't feel that it's fake when Asuka's in there, or at least no one told her it is, because she just fucking kicks you. Like, pardon my French again, but man, like, she will rip your arm off, she'll kick you in the head, and she will smile while she's doing it. Like, there's just something crazy about Asuka that it's hard not to appreciate. Her character is so above and beyond not only everybody on the NXT women's roster, but man, when she gets up to the main roster, like, she doesn't say a lot. She just destroys people in the ring, and she almost like transcends heel or face, because it's hard not to appreciate what she does. It's like Brock Lesnar in the women's division. Like, yeah, they're trying to make Brock Lesnar a heel going up against Goldberg. We saw how that worked on Monday night with the whole crowd loving Brock Lesnar. Granted, it was in Minnesota, but for some reason, WWE thought that Brock was going to get booed. I don't know. That's a whole other thing. But Asuka, you know, very much the Brock of the female division, where she's just, you know, she goes in there and she just straight up tries to murder people. And it's hard not to appreciate how friggin' good she is at it. So, you know, heel or face, obviously she was a heel against Bayley, because anyone would be a heel against Bayley. You know, but nonetheless, she can adapt with whatever they want to throw at her. She's going to be the, you know, quote unquote heel against Mickie James, who is coming in out of nowhere after not being around WWE for a long ass time, and she's getting a title match. I don't quite see what's so babyface-ish about that, but obviously she's a beloved female wrestler, and she did, like she said in her promo after this match, because Regal announces after Asuka wins this match via Fujiwara armbar, that Regal is going to has searched the planet for her opponent, and she found this woman, and Mickie James appears on the screen, and she says, basically, you know, I laid the groundwork for this women's revolution that you're now a part of, and unless you beat me, you haven't beaten anybody, which sort of doesn't sound necessarily like a great compliment to yourself, but, you know, she said, you've beaten everybody, but until you beat me, you haven't beaten anybody. I'm coming for that NXT women's title. We're getting Mickie James versus Asuka and TakeOver Toronto. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be really good. It's definitely better than anything that they could have thrown at Asuka from the existing women's roster. It would have been kind of cool to see, you know, since Emma's coming back soon, one of my favorite women's matches of all time was that match between Asuka and Emma. I believe it was at TakeOver London. That was just like a kick-ass match. I think even Meltzer gave it over four stars, you know, for whatever that's worth. I don't necessarily abide by his star ratings more often than not. I got my own. I watch wrestling too. I got star ratings, but I'm just, you know, I'm not going to bore you guys with my star ratings. Anyway, that was a great match. It would have been kind of cool to have Emma come in NXT sort of as a transition to work her way back up to the main roster. Maybe she has a one-off against Asuka, and they can have another kick-ass match. Asuka can look good, Emma can look good, and then Emma, you know, officially broken in back from her back surgery now, knocks off the ring rust and can make her way up to the main roster. So that would have been the direction I would have went. I'm much more interested in seeing Emma wrestle these days than I am about seeing Mickie James wrestle, just because it's, I mean, not that it wouldn't be obvious that Emma was going to lose that match, but it's, there's no way in hell Mickie James is winning this title match against Asuka in NXT. Like, why? Why would they do that? It'd be like, you know, just bringing in, it's like, it would be like Goldberg beating Brock Lesnar. You've spent all this time building Brock Lesnar or Asuka, and now all of a sudden you're just going to have a random person come, a blast from the past, come in on a one-off and beat this person that you've spent all this time building. It doesn't make the slightest bit of sense. It's going to be a good match, though. Mickie James is a good worker. You know, she, if you haven't gone back, I wouldn't necessarily recommend a ton of stuff from her WWE days, but if you go back to her TNA runs, especially some of her latter runs before they got into the weird James Storm throwing her into a train drama, you know, she had some kick-ass matches with Gail Kim, who's like one of my favorites, if not my favorite female wrestler of all time. Obviously, Charlotte, Bayley, Sasha, Becky are all going to be, you know, have claim at that at some point, or at least, you know, they could very well trump her, but as of right now, Gail Kim's my favorite, and she's, you know, she carried TNA's women's division for a long ass time, the knockouts division rather, and she had some great matches against Mickie James, and Mickie James has, you know, had a slew of different opponents down there. I think she had a bit of a rivalry with the Beautiful People, both Angelina Love and Velvet Sky, who became a better worker towards her tail end at TNA, but you know, go back and find some of Mickie James's TNA matches. That's probably some of her best work, and looking forward to see her get in the ring with Asuka.
Got my ear to the street, brother. Yeah, the streets are talking. Dig it. What are they saying, brother? Well, Hulkster, turns out there's a brand new show coming to the World Wrestling Podcast Network. Yeah, it's called Throwback. Dig it. It's an interactive podcast where the viewers pick their favorite pay-per-views from the 80s and 90s, yeah. And then your two hosts, the prodigal one, JB, and the man with the skills to pay the bills, CEO Hayes, dissect and review each pay-per-view, yeah. Well, let me tell you something, brother. That sounds better than the time I slammed Andre the Giant in front of 397,000 people at WrestleMania 3, brother. Oh, yeah, Hulkster, and it's better than the time I fake married Miss Elizabeth on Saturday night's main event. Yeah. So what you want to do, brother, is go to iTunes and check out the World Wrestling Podcast Network and their brand new show, Throwback, brother. Oh, yeah.
All right, so we come back from commercial. Paul Ellering with the Authors of Pain is being interviewed in the back. Ellering says, you know, he has a plan, he has a strategy, and the Authors of Pain are going to execute his strategy. You know, he's very cryptic and very weird, but obviously the Authors of Pain are here to hurt people and do Paul Ellering's bidding. He actually puts over No Way Jose and Rich Swann a little bit, telling them that they both have bright futures, but they're not going to be advancing in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, certainly not at the expense of the Authors of Pain. That's going to be an interesting match. You got No Way Jose and Rich Swann are two just fun-loving, cool, you know, happy dudes, and the Authors of Pain are the complete opposite of that. This is going to be a pretty interesting match, just to see how much Jose and Swan basically, like, whether or not their antics can get to the Authors of Pain, or if they can rattle Paul Ellering, maybe, and to see, you know, how much offense they get in, basically. The Authors of Pain have been running through everybody, and I don't see any reason why this is going to be any different. No Way Jose, obviously, they've been building, and Swan's been getting some wins on Raw and on NXT, but It's not looking too good for them. The Authors of Pain have been killing everybody, and I don't see that stopping here. Now, Ellering tells the Authors of Pain to, you know, to tell Jose and Swan that they're going to beat them, and they both yell in foreign languages, no subtitles. I'm, you know, fairly educated person. I couldn't identify those languages. Maybe it's just because they were yelling. I think it was two different languages, if I'm not mistaken. They both speak a different language. How do they communicate with Paul Ellering? Speaking of Paul Ellering, while addressing No Way Jose and Rich Swann, he calls them Mr. Swann and Mr. Jose. So I guess I'm to believe that No Way is is his first name, or No is his first name, Wei is his middle name, and Jose is his last name? I don't know. And why wouldn't it be Senor Jose? Or is that, like, too... Never mind. I just thought it was interesting he called him Mr. Jose. Paul Ellering, you know... He first of all, you could tell he was kind of searching for their names a little bit, or at least Rich Swann's name, but it's sort of weird seeing Paul Ellering cut promos on Rich Swann. Like, I don't know about you guys, but if you've been watching wrestling as long as I have, and you know, Rich Swann from his days in PWG and stuff like that, it never in a million years would I have thought Paul Ellering would be cutting promos on him, but here we are. It's 2016. The whole world's upside down anyway. Why not? Next up, we find out that Sanity, obviously, I mean, if you looked at the bracket, you know this, but they remind us that Sanity is in action next week. They're taking on the winners of our main event, and our main event is Lince Dorado teaming up with Mustafa Ali, taking on Kota Ibushi and TJ Perkins in another first round Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic match, so... it's a pretty good match. I've kind of tried to avoid breaking down each of the matches here by move to move, but this whole match, I mean, we had a really good series of spots that kind of ended here. They've, again, before I get into sort of the play-by-play, they've done a really good job of making all the losers of these matches look really good. This one was certainly no different. Lince Dorado has picked up a couple wins. He's tagged on up on the Raw with Drew Gulak, and I think they even teamed him up with Grand Metalik at one point, because they just like to throw all of the luchadors together. It's very strange. Well, I guess it's not, but it's just still sort of ridiculous that anytime they get masked guys, they just decide to throw them together. So they make Ali and Dorado look really strong. Both of them really good in-ring workers. I had heard a little bit about Mustafa Ali before the Cruiserweight Classic, and basically, the rep that I had heard, or at least, you know, the opinion of the one or two people that I had talked to, was that this guy's a really good in-ring worker, and thus far, he's been showing it, and they're keeping him around, and they're teaming him up with Lince Dorado and trusting him to work with guys like TJ Perkins and Kota Ibushi. So obviously, the folks in the back at NXT are, they have high hopes for Mustafa Ali, or at least they're going to keep him around, give him a paycheck, and let him do a few jobs and make a few guys look good, which he's certainly capable of doing. So like I said, we do get a crazy series of events in this match. I'll start with, at one point, Ali and Dorado are in the ring, double-teaming Ibushi, who hits them with a double Pele kick. Like, this guy's just absolutely no regard for his body. He's coming, he's had... obviously well-known neck issues. If you watch the Cruiserweight Classic, Daniel Bryan wouldn't shut up about them. But yeah, I mean, the guy's had has had major neck surgery, and doing this double Pele kick, I mean, yeah, he gets his arms up and he protects himself a little bit, but it's like suicide, man. Like, this guy just, he's asking to just break his neck. And there's just something crazy about some of these Japanese wrestlers. I don't know if it's just their culture in general, or just the way that they look at professional wrestling, or the fact that they're trying to make it look as like legit sport as possible. Maybe it's part of the strong style movement, which is used very vaguely when describing wrestling. I mean, I look at it from my point of view, strong style is basically like you're not working it, you're just straight up punching and kicking dudes. I don't know if that's just what the perception is, or if I'm getting worked pretty badly, but to my knowledge, that's sort of how I would describe it to people, is that it's just a lot of strikes and a lot of fighting spirit, to use a term that was overused a whole lot in the early NXT days, or at least maybe about a year ago when I was watching. It's one of those things Byron Saxton used to say all the time. So when I first started watching, I suppose that was something that they talked about a lot, but it's almost like these guys have a death wish. Like Ibushi, I don't see a point that he's ever going to not wrestle. And so inevitably, I feel like that just means he's going to die in the ring. Like, I don't want to predict anything that horrible, but there's almost something about these guys that they're so dedicated to their craft that they are. I mean, even if you look at New Japan now, there's a lot of older wrestlers out there, and yeah, they're all still in really good shape. And let's all just hope that nothing bad ever happens again, because we have had some tragedies in the ring. Obviously, Pero Aguayo Jr., and there's a whole litany of other ones. I mean, here in the States anyway, we had Brian Pillman in the ring. We had the Owen Hart incident, which is obviously not necessarily related to wrestling as much as it was, special effects gone wrong. But it's tragic. We don't ever want to see anybody get seriously injured, obviously. And it's hard to watch Kota Ibushi wrestle, because the man looks like he's just looking to get injured. But So he hits this double Pele kick, and he immediately, you know, a little bit back and forth with Dorado. He hits a second rope moonsault. He tags TJP, who has already tagged himself in for some reason. Ibushi really having a difficult time adjusting to the American style, but tags in TJP right before he hits his second rope moonsault. TJP hits a frog splash, and, you know, it's broken up. By Ali there. We have a near fall broken up by Ali. Perkins knocks Ali to the outside. We get a golden triangle moonsault by Ibushi to the outside to Ali. In the ring, Ibushi hits what's called a wrecking ball dropkick to Lince Dorado, who's kind of sprawled over the second rope, almost like the setup for a 619. All right, exactly like a setup for a 619. But Perkins hits that wrecking ball dropkick, hopping over the top rope and swinging back and hitting Dorado in the face. He gets back into the ring. He's about to go try and lock on a knee bar with a very cool sort of lucha-esque transition. And Lince Dorado catches him and rolls him up basically for a near fall. And Lince Dorado rolls up yet again. Almost immediately after that, Perkins rolls up Perkins, and Ibushi has to come in and break it up. So we've had two near falls here for Dorado on Perkins. So that, you know, that's a big showing there for Dorado to get that close to beating the cruiserweight champion. Obviously, that's, you know, makes him look a little bit stronger, although he is ultimately going to lose here. We get Ali tags in as Dorado kind of crawls to the corner, hits a stiff kick to Ibushi. Both of them essentially, Ibushi rolls out of the ring. Perkins now turns his attention to Ali. They're both the legal men. He locks in the knee bar on Ali, and Ali taps. That's the end of that. The Ibushi and Perkins are going to be moving on to the next round to face Sanity, who shockingly doesn't come out and attack Ibushi and Perkins after this match. Maybe they're just... there's some sort of contractual thing where they don't want to, or a health concern with both of these guys. They don't want to risk anything bad happening to Ibushi, who's here part-time, and Perkins, who's their cruiserweight champion, and they didn't want to run the risk of anybody getting hurt in real life if Sanity comes out and kind of attacks them from behind. But I almost was certain that when they told us before this match Sanity was taking on the winner of this match, that we were going to get a run-in after or during the match that would result in... Sanity standing tall at the end of this episode, and making Ibushi and Perkins, who were obviously going to win this match, aware of what they're messing with the next week. Right before we go to off the air, we get Ibushi and TJ kind of celebrating in the ring. TJ gets Ibushi to dab, which I'm sure will be a gif on Reddit tomorrow. And it was another kick-ass episode of NXT, in my opinion. They got a lot in. We got an Asuka match, which is always good in my book. We got a Ty Dillinger win, which is always good in my book. We got a sick Samoa Joe promo, and that main event was so good that, like I said, I was really trying to avoid to go on this crazy breakdown of matches because, frankly, you know, I can't describe them to you as well as Tom Phillips or Corey Graves can, and frankly, if you're all that interested in the technical work, go watch it, and you did. So, I don't need to kind of reiterate all that stuff to you guys. You're all smart wrestling fans. You're sitting here listening to a wrestling podcast, so clearly you're into the art of professional wrestling, and you chose a great place to do it right here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network, the Next Level Wrestling Podcast. And basically, before I head into the last segment here, or I get out of the recap here of episode 360 of NXT, let's talk a little bit about the knee bar. TJ Perkins' finishing move has been kind of criticized. I mean, Perkins is a guy who's been wrestling for 16, 17 years. He's been wrestling since he was like 13 years old. He's incredibly gifted athletically. There's a litany of different moves that he could have used as a finishing move, and for whatever reason, it kind of went with this knee bar. He's kind of got this weird mix of lucha libre, and he does a little bit of Japanese strong style, and he does a little bit of sort of MMA-type moves, and they went with the knee bar as his finish. There's certainly pluses and minuses to it. There's been a lot of criticism of him picking that move. He could have used any number of other cool moves that he can use as a finisher. But I like the knee bar, and here's why I like the knee bar. The knee bar is one of many finishers that we've seen in recent WWE history, where we've had some guys come up and bring in their own moves or their own move set, finishing moves from outside the company, or guys coming up through the system that have developed a certain move set that Basically, I like the idea that you could slap your finisher on at any time and win a match. What I also like is that you could slap on, you know, move X at any time and finish the match. Now, Perkins can do a frog splash. He could do the knee bar. He could do a whole bunch of different flying, high-flying stuff. I'm sure he's good for an octopus submission if he really wanted to. But, like, I like the idea of the finisher evolving in wrestling. And what I mean by that is, like, all right, so let's take a guy like Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens has the pop-up powerbomb. That's his finisher. But he's also got, you know, he does sort of that springboard moonsault, and he's got the bullfrog splash, and he's got a bunch of other moves that are devastating. And, he's got that one cradle reversal that he does to super, but when somebody tries to superplex him, he does like almost like a package knee breaker of sorts. He's got his package powerbomb as well as the package pile driver, which we'll probably never see on WWE TV. But he's got a bunch of really devastating, I guess, quote unquote, signature moves. And that's awesome, because those moves should also be able to finish matches. Like, if you're going in a back and forth battle with him and, let's say, John Cena, since they had an incredible series of matches last year, there's no reason that he needs to absolutely win that match with a pop-up powerbomb. If him and Cena have been slugging it out for 20, 25 minutes, there's no reason that one of these other devastating moves couldn't win the match. Like the Blue Thunderbomb for Sami Zayn. If that guy won one friggin' match with the Blue Thunderbomb, that move is forever. Like, everyone pops now every near fall for that match for the foreseeable future. Same thing with Ziggler's Famister that he does. Like, these guys have never won matches with these moves, but, like, why couldn't they? Why after battling another person for 20, 25 minutes, do you need to hit that one specific move to put them out? Like, if I've been fighting with somebody for 25 minutes, a pretty basic move could be the one that ends it. I mean, like, why wouldn't a right hand justifiably end it? I get that this is all fake, guys, but, you know, part of this sport or part of this performance art is that it needs to kind of mimic actual competition, and there's no reason why a certain, you know, impactful move at a certain point in a match couldn't be the move that ends it. It doesn't necessarily always need to be the finisher. We have seen sort of an evolution of guys having multiple finishers, like AJ Styles has the Styles Clash, he's got the Flying Forearm, and he's got the Calf Crusher. Any one of those three matches can win a match at any time. Three of his first four victories on WWE TV came courtesy of those three moves, of the four victories, he used those three moves to win it, and that's really cool. Now, with the knee bar, getting back to TJ Perkins' finishing move here, what I like about it is that he could slap it on at any point in the match, but it doesn't necessarily end the match. It's an incredibly easy move to escape from, because just the virtue of laying flat on the mat, and Perkins laying flat on the mat, you're always basically somewhere close to a rope, or at least within crawling distance. But the thing with the knee bar is that he'll keep trying to put it on you, and keep trying to put it on you, and eventually, after 10, 15 minutes, he's been beating on you, and you guys have been going back and forth, and you're out of gas, and, you know, 15 minutes into a war, he slaps on that knee bar, and damn it, his, you know, opponent just doesn't have the energy to get to the rope. I think it's an incredible piece of storytelling. I mean, sure, he can win matches with 450 splashes, that's great. Half the indies can do 450 splashes, and half the cruiserweight division can do 450 splashes. They're a spectacle to see. They've almost kind of been passé now, because you got guys doing 630 centons and red arrows and phoenix splashes and shit like that these days. But he could do a 450 splash and end a match, and that's all well and good, but this is like a storytelling piece that is sort of new to WWE. They don't do this a lot, this sort of like easy to escape finisher, but it could at any time end a match if and when the opponent is just out of gas, or maybe, you know, Perkins can weaken his opponent quickly with a series of strikes, and the guy's kind of groggy. Now he's in the middle of the ring. He doesn't even know where he is. He doesn't know where the ropes are. He just knows he's in pain, and he needs to tap the hell out because this match is going to be over, or his leg is going to be. And I just think the knee bars are really cool. It's a really cool piece for TJ Perkins, who they're going to beat us over to death, over the head to death with these stupid video game references. But I'm starting to appreciate it. Like, at first it was really corny. Now it's so corny, it's like admirable as to how he keeps sneaking these things in. Obviously, it's not him, because no one talks like that. Even somebody who plays a ton of video games like TJ Perkins does, there's no way he's working in that kind of jargon into his everyday language. But he's starting to show a little bit more character, and I think he's going to do a lot of his storytelling. I mean, he's going to do most of his storytelling in the ring. He's a kick-ass in-ring worker. He's just, like, a really nice dude. I think maybe one day he could probably make a good heel, just by virtue of he's so nice that, like, when he ultimately snaps and turns on somebody, it'll make an impact. But for right now, he's young, he's the champ. You know, he's riding high, and TJ Perkins is, you know, he's going to do everything he can to sneak in video game references for no apparent reason. And they're not even, like, specific video game references. It's just, like, to general attributes of video games, like HP and reset options and just, you know, stupid video game references. I don't know. You know, of the 26 writers that work for WWE, I'd like to hope that there isn't more than one of them dedicated to this. Like, maybe it's just Dewey Foley. This is his task, is to come up with stupid video game things every week, as he is like a writer's assistant in WWE creative. But I like TJ Perkins. I've always liked TJ Perkins. I liked him when he was Suicide and Manic and TNA, and they had that kind of weird run where Hogan came in and he took off the mask and he wanted to be TJ Perkins, and Josh Matthews was a dick on Twitter. And there's just, you know, TJ Perkins is, he keeps it interesting at a bare minimum. His in-ring style is very versatile, very athletic. He's awesome. So let's hope TJ Perkins pulls out a victory at Hell in a Cell against Brian Kendrick, and he moves on, and we can just get a nice little run for Perkins, legitimize that title. Maybe ultimately we get to the point to where, you know, one of the bigger names on WWE comes down to him. Maybe we get Sami Zayn, or we get Jericho if he can get under 205, or at least make it look like he's under 205, or Neville if they ever decide to actually use him correctly. And, you know, it'd be cool to see it get to the point to where if they could somehow do it where he just is running through the cruiserweights without making the entire division look like shit. I think that'd be really that'd be a cool culmination. Like, is TJ Perkins holding the cruiserweight title until WrestleMania? I mean, I'd think so at this point, only because I have no reason to believe anybody else is going to take it from him. Maybe Kendrick takes it from him at Hell in a Cell, but you could bet your ass that Perkins is taking it back from him. There's no way Brian Kendrick is going over TJ Perkins at the end of this feud. But maybe they do the title switch so they could give Kendrick his singles title and give him further legitimacy. Like I said, he's the only one in the cruiserweight division that has any name recognition already. He's really good for putting over Perkins, but there's really no need for him to be going over in any capacity. He just lost on Raw to Rich Swann, which is awesome because Swann deserves the win. Now I'm getting into a little bit more main roster stuff. But yeah, Perkins is great. Ibushi's great. The one thing, like I mentioned earlier in the show, and this will be pretty much it before I get to the final segment, is the Full Sail crowd. The one little thing that they did that bothered me tonight is Perkins comes out to be Ibushi's partner. Maybe it was a surprise to them in the arena. They didn't, you know, maybe they weren't even aware that Itami was hurt. I don't know how much they know at the time of the shooting, at the time of the filming for this episode, but Perkins comes out and they're all really excited to see Perkins, and that's great. You guys should be excited to see TJ Perkins. He's fucking awesome, and he's your Cruiserweight champion, and he was, you know, he ran Full Sail for basically a month as he was working his way through that Cruiserweight Classic tournament. But Kota Ibushi's a part-timer. He's also happens to be one of the best damn wrestlers in the world. There's no reason why they should just be continuously going apeshit for TJ Perkins when Kota Ibushi's there. And frankly, we don't get Kota Ibushi as often as we get TJ Perkins. So we probably should be cheering for him a whole lot in hopes that he comes back more. Even Perkins had this look on his face like he couldn't believe that Ibushi wasn't getting the cheers, and he was. But maybe it's a testament to the writers of the Cruiserweight Classic and the Cruiserweight division that they've already made TJ Perkins a big enough star to where the Full Sail crowd wanted to cheer for him over Kota Ibushi. I mean, maybe that's a good thing. I personally thought it was a little... it bothered me a little bit that they weren't rooting more for Ibushi when you know, at the very beginning of the match. Like I said, I mean, we should be doing everything we can to try and keep Kota Ibushi around here. He's made it very clear that he's not going to sign a full-time contract with WWE. That doesn't mean he couldn't be doing more one-offs, and certainly his presence in Full Sail makes it seem like a bigger deal than it actually is, and he can come in and put a few guys over. Like, I'd love to see Kota Ibushi and Bobby Roode. Love to see Kota Ibushi and Roderick Strong. Love to see Kota Ibushi and Ty Dillinger. Fuck it. You sign me up for Kota Ibushi versus Asuka right now, and I'd just be elated. So that's it for episode 360 of NXT. And yeah, that's it. We're just going to move on to the final segment here. 450 pounds, John Cale.
Pitbull!
All right, guys, so before I go ahead and get into the NXT Alumni Spotlight here for this week, I did just want to drop a little bit of personal news. I am, as you guys may know, the proud father of a wonderful 8-year-old girl named Logan. She is my everything, and trying to turn her into a bit of a wrestling fan. I've managed to get her into Bayley and Sasha and kind of the Four Horsewomen a little bit. She knows Charlotte because she actually stood in line with me for 2 hours at her own choosing to meet Ric Flair and get his autograph. I actually have an autograph picture that she drew of him. It's, you know, it's not the greatest picture in the world. She was 4 at the time, maybe, and she was doodling in line. I said, hey, why don't you draw a picture of the champ? She went ahead and did, because I happen to have his autobiography with me, so she looked at his picture, drew a picture, and sure enough, you know, the GOAT, Ric Flair, woo, himself, went ahead and signed it to Logan. So that's, you know, that's just like an awesome thing. So I'm trying to get her more into wrestling, and I'm very happy to tell you, and happy in general, that I get to have the pleasure of taking her to her first wrestling event. There's actually a local indie event going on at her local high school. She's 8, so she doesn't go to high school yet, but there is an event going on November 19th for Wrestling is Magic. Pro Wrestling is Magic, I guess, is the name of the federation. So we're going to see that, but more importantly, I bought her tickets for the two of us to go to MSG to go to the house show right at the day after Christmas, and she's already stoked about it, and I'm just so happy that she's excited. I'm really, really double-crossing my fingers, or crossing my fingers to hope that Bayley makes an appearance, even though it is going opposite Raw that night, and obviously Bayley's on the Raw roster, but it is, you know, a house show that's designed for families and stuff, so I'm really hoping that they make that work, and they can maybe get Bayley over for just a quick pop-in, at least to pop the crowd and get the kids all excited. I'm happy I get to be kayfabe dad. As you guys might know, there was a really good little write-up on Reddit. I believe it was user Tyrus, not Tyrus the wrestler, I think it was T-Y-R-S, wrote a nice little thing calling kayfabe dad the real MVP. And that's, you know, we get to be the guys that do more for the furthering of this great performance art than really even any of the creative team does. You know, I get to kind of sit there and go through the motions and root for the good guys and boo the bad guys and, you know, just set a good example for what a young wrestling fan should expect and see at a wrestling show. And I'm excited to get to play that role. So that's a little bit of that, just on some personal news. But anyway, like I said, I did want to get into the NXT Alumni Spotlight. This week, we're going to be talking about Eddie Edwards. I touched a little bit on Eddie you know, before earlier on in the show, where I was kind of giving the explanation as to how he became the NXT Alumni Spotlight, but he did, you know, come into NXT for a tryout match with Davey Richards. They are the American Wolves, and when they're both healthy and going strong, they're one of the best tag teams in the world. They're one of my favorites. They make everything interesting, and they are really cut from that same vein as, like, the Motor City Machine Guns, who are also one of my favorite tag teams, maybe ever. You know, these guys. There is one match out there on YouTube. I believe you could find it. I think it's the Federation is 2CW Squared Circle Wrestling, and they have a match, I believe, on there between the Motor City Machine Guns and the American Wolves. So I believe that's free. It's on YouTube. I'm 95% sure that's how I saw it. So go check that out, because it's definitely worth a look. It's two of the best tag teams you're probably ever going to see in your life, you know, squaring off in front of a crowd of like 100 people for a belt that no one, you know, outside of the people in that federation generally care about. But these, you know, those four guys went out there and just killed it. But Eddie Edwards, let's go through a little bit of some of his personal accomplishments. In 2011, he was ranked number 9 in the PWI Top 500. Which, I mean, I've been watching wrestling my whole life. I don't even know that I was aware of Eddie Edwards in 2011. I kind of only jumped onto the indie scene maybe in the last 4 years or so, 3-4 years, maybe not even that long. But once I did get into it, I dove headfirst into it. I've seen just about everything there is to see from Ring of Honor and PWG and New Japan over the last several years. So, you know, Eddie Edwards is a fantastic talent. He's finally been given the ability to kind of be a single star in TNA, unfortunately because Davey Richards is hurt, but like I said, kind of going back to some of his accomplishments here, he was the first ever Ring of Honor Triple Crown champion, which means he held the world title, the TV title, and the tag titles at different times or over the course of his Ring of Honor career. He's the eighth TNA Triple Crown champion, and I'm pretty sure he did all that in the last year to 18 months. He was the tag champs with Davey Richards. They had to relinquish them because Eddie got hurt. I think they even won them back once Eddie came back, and then, of course, Davey gets hurt. They could just never seem to both be healthy at the same time in their TNA run. But when they have been, I mean, they've had some tremendous feuds with the Hardy Boys and the Dudleys. They had a whole series of matches together, and all of them were spectacular. I'd suggest you guys go back and take a look at all those. They did also have the Best of Five series with the Dirty Heels, which was Austin Aries and Bobby Roode, both in NXT now. And as I may have mentioned already, Eddie Edwards is the current TNA Heavyweight World Champion. He, in a miraculous win, took the title off of Bobby Lashley, which was quite a feat in kayfabe. I mean, he is, Bobby Lashley has been built to be an absolute monster. He's the TNA equivalent of Brock Lesnar, essentially. He just mows through people. He's a real fighter, quote unquote, you know, that whole shtick. And after building him for pretty much a year, he drops the title on TNA Impact to Eddie Edwards in what was, you know, one of the bigger upsets in recent history in TNA, and it worked out really well for Eddie. Eddie has been killing it since he's been given the singles run. He's won the X Division title twice. He's now the World Heavyweight Champion. He's had some great matches with Lashley and with Drew McIntyre, with Aaron Rex, Damian Sandow. And speaking of Damian Sandow, I mean, this is one of those things about NXT that if you've been following it religiously, like a lot of us have, you notice every so often guys come through there and for whatever reason, they don't quite catch on with TNA, with WWE or NXT creative the way that they should. We've seen guys like Ethan Carter III come through there. We've seen guys like Marty the Moth Martinez go through there. And obviously, you know, the WWE in general kind of misses the boat on some talent with Alberto Del Rio, Cody Rhodes, Christian, Drew Galloway, / Drew McIntyre. They're not always 100%. And you'll notice that I didn't mention Aaron Rex and Damian Sandow in there, as I'm not necessarily sold that he is going to be the big star everyone thought he was going to be. But we, you know, we're here talking about Eddie Edwards. And like I said, he's the world champ right now. There's a lot on his plate ahead of him. TNA is kind of doing this remarkably and surprisingly spectacular job of building several world title contenders right now. You got Eli Drake, you have Ethan Carter III, Drew Galloway when he comes back, Aaron Rex, Bobby Lashley. There's no shortage of guys that can always get Broken Hardy back into the mix there. Jeff Hardy, Brother Nero, if you will. I mean, there's plenty of viable world title contenders, Cody Rhodes and the Miracle Mike Bennett, also a couple names. So Eddie's holding the title at a really rough time to be the champion because there are just so many guys gunning for him. But the one feud that I personally would love to see happen is an angry and bitter Davey Richards coming back from injury and turning on Eddie Edwards and seeing that feud. They did have a tournament match of some sort a while back that actually went to a 15-minute time limit draw. And the two guys, I mean, they just know each other so well in the ring. The whole match was back and forth. It was really something to watch. Even though it ended in a tie, it still wasn't really all that disappointing. I mean, these guys, like I said, I mean, they just know each other really well, and they work together spectacularly in the ring. Whether or not that's really going to move the needle for TNA in the world title picture or not is remains to be seen, basically. But I think that would be a really good feud, and I mean, I love the American Wolves, or the Wolves, as they're called in TNA. I am a member of Wolves Nation. If I didn't mention before, when they entered NXT, they did pop in as the American Pitbulls. So you could search that, I believe, on WWE Network, and you could find that one match that they had with the Ascension. And there was a spot in the match where Davey Richards kind of botches a move, and you know, I'm not necessarily comfortable with that word, but apparently there was a miscue there, and Davey Richards, you know, ended up kind of, you know, botching a spot, I guess, for lack of a better word. And that's rumored to be the reason that they didn't end up staying in NXT and WWE, which is a real shame. I mean, you know, you have one match and something could go wrong. It looked to be Davey's fault, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but you know, it looked to be Davey's fault at the time. They were working with the Ascension, who have, you know, literally become nothing now in WWE. So it makes you wonder if the Wolves would have been treated the same, or if they could have just shined through like we know they can. They're both tremendous talents. Eddie Edwards has really proven his worth right now. And TNA should be lucky to have this guy. I mean, he's actually cutting really, really good promos, which is sort of a surprise. In the past, you know, he's obviously cut promos with the Wolves, but never anything kind of over the, you know, never anything really spectacular, but he's really been just doing a great job recently. He's got that real heavy Boston accent. His finish was the Boston Knee Party. He's started kind of getting that gimmick together, and it's really working for him, and he's going to be a fighting champ, and he's going to be the underdog. He's going to do a lot of fighting from underneath, but I think he's going to hopefully have a nice little run here with the TNA World title, and either we'll get him back with Davey or maybe even against Davey once Davey comes back, and, you know, there's always the possibility that TNA folds and Eddie Edwards is found to be the last ever TNA World Champion. Oh, wouldn't that be crazy to be the last champion of a promotion? And then hopefully he can carry that over to WWE or over to New Japan or wherever he really wants to go. But Eddie Edwards, phenomenal talent. That's why he's the subject of this week's NXT Alumni Spotlight. Guys, if you have any opinions on Eddie Edwards or maybe opponents you want to see him take on in the future, there's one way for you to get those questions and suggestions to me. You can, there's two ways. You can go to wwpnbello@gmail.com. Go ahead and send me your questions, comments about Eddie Edwards. You can do the same thing on Twitter at wwpnbello. Guys, I appreciate you tuning in and listening as always. Right here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network, I am the Andrew Bello. I'm your host, and I'm just eternally grateful you guys have taken the time to listen to me. I hope I haven't wasted it. I hope to have you back next week. Follow me on Twitter. My offer is still standing. If you guys could get me to 200 followers on Twitter, I will pick a random one who is hopefully resides in the continental U.S., and I have a large Dean Ambrose Dirty Deeds sweatshirt selling right now in WWE Shop for $49.99. So I happen to have an extra, and it's in the packaging, and I'm more than happy to give it to a lucky fan. I don't even want to call you guys fans. You're listeners. There's absolutely no reason to be a fan of me. I just am another wrestling fan like yourselves, just looking for an outlet to talk to other wrestling fans. So this is it. Thanks to CEO Hayes and the Wrestling World Podcast Network. Check out all of the shows on the network, and I've shouted out just about every show, but we do have JB coming up soon with the Throwback podcast here. He's going to be doing retro shows. I think they start off, him and CEO Hayes are going to be breaking down the supposed greatest rumble of all time, 1992's Royal Rumble for the world, for the WWE title. Certainly a great rumble, don't get me wrong, not my personal favorite, but definitely up there. So check that out with JB and CEO. Keep an eye here on the network, and like I said, I've shouted out just about everybody else, and I feel like I've left somebody out. So Mimi out there, Mimi is one of our hosts of you know, any podcast she feels like getting on, basically, but she's mostly on the Red Zone, I believe. You find her here. If you'll listen to all of our shows, you'll hear her. Mimi knows her shit. She is, you know, she's a big fan. And Mimi, on a personal note, I'm sorry for shitting on your boy Roman Reigns when I was doing the Red Zone with JB and CEO a couple weeks ago. I'm still going to continue to shit on him, but I'm sorry that you feel bad about it. So, Mimi, you know, hit me up on Twitter if you happen to hear this, and hopefully you'll accept my apology, and we can move forward here in the WWPN family. We all have varying points of view, varying perspectives on life, on wrestling. We got people from all over the country who all like different things here, and that's what's great about us here at the WWPN. We're not former wrestlers, former announcers, supposed insiders, dudes that live in their mother's basement trying to make a name for themselves. We are, you know, just wrestling fans like you guys. We are just trying our best to present a good product to you and share our love for professional wrestling with you. So thanks again, guys. It's been a pleasure. Tune in next week. I will probably be popping up on the Hell in a Cell post-show or pre-show or whatever. Just keep an eye out for me. You can always find me here on Thursdays, maybe even late Fridays, depending on how quickly CEO could get the episode up. Here on the Next Level Wrestling Podcast, I'm the Andrew Bello. This is the Wrestling World Podcast Network. Thank you again for your time, guys. Take care.
Yeah, for my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I saw my daughter send a letter to some boy her age who locked up. First I regretted it, then caught my rage. Like, how could I not protect her from this awful fate? Never tried to hide who I was, she was taught and raised like a princess. But while I'm on stage, I can't leave her defenseless. Plus she see me switching women, pops was on some pimps. She heard stories of her daddy thugging. So if her husband is a gangster, can't be mad, I love her. Never for her, I want better. Homie in jail, dead.